Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. The first one is kind of a layered good martini that's not all great, but it deals with the media firestorm surrounding Ben Carson in recent days, whether it's the story of his consideration and likely acceptance into West Point, whether it's his thoughts on the Egyptian pyramids and their initial purposes, his violent tendencies as a teenager and that sort of thing. A lot of different things have come up, and those sorts of things do come up when you surge to the front of the pack. He was met by Chris Jansing of NBC at an airport in New York over the weekend, and he summed up what he thinks is going on right now.
Vetting is a normal part of the process. Did you not expect this?
I have always said that I expect to be vetted. But being vetted and what is going on with me, you said this 30 years ago, you said this 20 years ago, this didn't exist, this didn't exist. You know, I have not seen that with anyone else.
So what do you think is going on? Why you?
Because I'm a threat.
To?
To the progressive, the secular progressive movement in this country. I'm a very big threat because, you know, they can look at the polling data and they can see that, you know, I'm the candidate who's most likely to be able to beat Hillary Clinton.
And in a recent poll, he is 10 points ahead of Hillary Clinton. And obviously, the narrative that the media and others on the left like to paint, Ian, is that black Americans generally tend liberal. And if you have a strong black conservative, that upsets the apple cart there. At the same time, Carson does need to get his story straight. And if you have a pattern of even little inaccuracies from story to story, it can tend to dent the image and the narrative, which is obviously a big part of his candidacy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think his response to this has been mixed. I'm of two minds about this. One, I think they're absolutely gunning for him. There's no question about that. He's spot on that suddenly we have a 48-hour news cycle about what he thinks about the pyramids. Are you kidding me? I couldn't care less what he thinks the pyramids were built for. What I care about is whether or not he can manage an economy, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no question that they're going above and beyond. And if you look at the double standard here, I mean, the sitting president of the United States palled around with admitted domestic terrorists, spent 20 years in a church with a man who said, you know, GD America. His biography was full of, quote, composite characters. We're not going to worry about that. You know, no big deal. It sounds like a trustworthy guy, so go with it. All of that said, there have been little discrepancies that seem to be getting wider. He said yesterday on Meet the Press in that interview, well, maybe General Westmoreland wasn't there on Memorial Day, but he was there when I was a senior, and I think I'm not positive about this, but I was seeing this morning people saying, well, he said, well, maybe General Westmoreland wasn't there, but somebody, you know, there are these tiny little concessions, and with the media gunning for you, they all add up. They're very easily spun. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if over the course of his lifetime, which has been a very big life, you know, he's a hero in many circles. Some of these stories have grown lives of their own. They've been exaggerated in the telling and the retelling. Whether that should be relevant to voters as far as what kind of, you know, chief executive he'd make, if the question is sort of one of is this guy reliable or not, I think it's sort of a 60-40 prospect at this point, and that's not great.
Not the greatest martini. A lot of mixed aspects in there. So maybe this is a martini with quite a few other things sprinkled in there. All right, on to the bad martini now. And it wasn't really a debate on MSNBC in South Carolina on Friday night. It was a candidate forum, meaning basically each one got a little bit of time with Rachel Maddow. One of them, of course, was Hillary Clinton. And one of the things that Rachel Maddow brought up was the fact that Hillary Clinton seems in general to be more favorable towards military intervention and perhaps quicker to support such a thing than President Obama has. And of course, that's anathema to MSNBC. And here's how that interchange went.
Is it fair for people to expect that you would be a more aggressive commander in chief than President Obama has been?
No. And here's why.
I spent a lot of time with President Obama in the Situation Room, struggling over a lot of really difficult decisions. I think the next president's going to have the same and maybe different, but continuations of some of the ones we currently have to struggle over as well. I want us to use diplomacy, which is why I spent 18 months putting together the sanctions against Iran so that we could force them to the negotiating table to try to prevent them from getting a nuclear weapon and end the talk of bombing them and going to war against them, but instead using diplomacy. So that is how I will approach these issues. However, I will not, I think it's irresponsible, to rule out force. I just will not do that. But it should always be the last resort, not the first choice.
Ian, there's a lot of parts of the Obama record that you and I don't like. The foreign policy record has got to be just as bad as anything else, and in some cases probably quite a bit worse. For Hillary Clinton to say, yep, I'm going to be pretty much just like him, it should send chills down anyone's spine.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Republicans should flog this to no end come the general election. That said, I'm going to demur here and say she's lying, and that's a good thing. There's a rare occasion in which I support a Clinton lie. Clinton's record, both the Secretary of State and beforehand, and if you go back to the debate last month, I wrote this up for National Review. I think what you saw is basically a sort of general 1990s era Democrat. When it comes to foreign policy, she's fairly well aligned, I think, with her husband. Now, she's in a party that is effectively the political wing of, you know, Amnesty International. This is sort of the International Red Cross as a political party. So she's under extreme pressure to tack hard, hard left when it comes to non-intervention, you know, no troops on the ground, all the same stuff you hear from President Obama. I'm of the opinion that she'll be more hawkish than he is. That said, a Republican would be much better for the job. But I think she's playing hard to the base here.
Well, let's hope so. And given the fact that she'll basically say whatever she needs to say in a given situation, perhaps you're right. We can actually take some solace in this particular example. All right, on to the crazy martini now. This is from Jazz Shah over at Hot Air, but he found the story at Reason Magazine. Reason brings us another depressing tale of students at one of the nation's most prestigious universities who clearly have been herded into a climate where nobody should ever be made to feel uncomfortable or have their own worldviews challenged. This time it's at Yale, where students want some administrators fired because they didn't speak out strongly enough about potentially off-putting Halloween costumes and a frat party. Quote, students are demanding that Yale University fire two administrators who failed to speak out against offensive Halloween costumes. This is just one of the grievances of activist students, many of them people of color, who claim Yale is not a safe space for them. On Thursday, the students surrounded Yale College Dean Jonathan Holloway, a black man, in an outdoor space and chided him for failing to take action against a fraternity that had allegedly prevented black women from attending its party. Students are also upset about an email in which the wife of Nicholas Christakis, master of Silliman College, dared to opine that it was inappropriate for the college to tell students how to dress for Halloween, but the administration backed down. In a closed-door meeting Thursday night, Yale's president apologized to a large group of minority students for the school's failure to make them feel safe on campus. "We failed you," said Peter Salovey, a psychologist, told more than 40 students gathered in the room where the Yale Corporation meets. So, Ian, not exactly what you think of when you think of the creme de la creme of higher education.
I don't know, Greg. I mean, when I think of Yale, I think of just these enormously oppressed, underprivileged, you know, students who just had it rough their whole lives. And no, I mean, this whole story is just everything conservatives complain about when it comes to free speech and identity politics and the rest on the campus. And let me give you a brief anecdote, because I happened to be at Yale on Friday for the Yale Buckley Program's Free Speech Conference. Greg Lukianoff of the Foundation for the Individual Rights in Education was speaking on one of the panels, and he said, he was telling the story that you just told, and he said, quote, "You would think by the reaction that Erica Christakis had burned down an Indian village." That was what he said. Gotta laugh, you know, this is sort of the way Greg talks. there happened to be a protester in the room who a moment later created a disturbance, was lifted literally out of the room, etc. By the end of the conference, about an hour and a half later, I would say there were 150, 200 students shouting, "Genocide is not a joke," outside the building as we all exited. A friend of mine went up to one of the protesters and asked, "What are you all protesting about? What do you think happened?" "Well, we heard that someone in that room said that we needed to burn down Indian villages." And then, so this protest is going on. My friend is speaking to one of the protesters. There is, you know, the typical sort of Occupy rabble leader up at the front giving a harangue with a megaphone. This little conversation is going on between my friend and this girl. And some of the protesters there who have been chanting and screaming for the past hour or so turn and say, "Excuse you, we're trying to hear our speaker. Do you mind keeping it down?" So, I mean, I tell that anecdote as to give listeners some context into just the type of mindlessness, utter and complete mindlessness that we're talking about at Yale right now, and for the administration to be completely spineless in addressing it is just shameful. There's no other way to put it.
One of the many things that college is supposed to do is prepare people for the real world. This is about as far from it as you can possibly imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A complete bubble.
Oh, man. Ian, as always, great to have you here. Talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.